Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, October 20th, 2020. We will begin today with the headline, Ready to Go. Unit 5 students head back to school in little step back to normal. This is by Kelsey Watznauer. With smiling eyes and just a few tears, the youngest students at McLean County Unit 5 headed into schools Monday morning for the first time since mid-March. Today was a great day, said Sarah Edwards, principal at Grove Elementary. It is wonderful to see the students step off the bus or step out of their car. It's a little step back to normal for us, and I know that I speak for the whole staff when I say we have been so excited for this day for so long to have the students back in school. Grove students were welcomed with excited good mornings from staff members ready to help them find their way to their classrooms. Across the district, students from pre-kindergarten to second grade returned to the elementary schools, while sixth and ninth graders were the first of the older students to begin the hybrid model. A few students had first day of school tears and nerves that made them hesitate, but most were in such a hurry to rush in from the chilly morning, they barely turned to say goodbye to their parents. I think the students are definitely ready. Even with the masks, you could tell the smiles were underneath there, Edwards said, glad to see only a few teary faces. Because of the district's safety restrictions, parents couldn't leave the parking lot to walk their students inside on Monday. But some parents snapped quick photos to commemorate the day, while others, like Layla Abolingdad Muhammad, recorded videos as their students headed in carrying boxes and bags of school supplies. Our parents did an amazing job. Every single parent that we asked said that they had had self-certified, so that was a huge deal, Edwards said. Our kindergarten families did amazing, getting their students with all of their supplies out of their car and moving through the line. I know that as time goes by, we'll get faster and faster, but I thought today was a huge success. Illinois schools in March were closed as COVID cases increased. School administrators over the summer decided whether to have students return to class or do remote learning or a mix. Several teachers and staff members on Monday wore lanyards with pictures of themselves attached to make sure students knew who they were behind the mask. Emily Calton, a kindergarten teacher, said one of the first questions she heard from a student once they were inside the classroom was whether they could take off their mask. She told the class their masks would have to stay on in the classroom, but later they would be able to take a break. The school nurse's office expanded to fill a classroom this year to make sure there would be adequate space for distancing. A clear plastic divider, which we're lovingly calling the bubble, was added to be able to keep six students separated, said Susie Markham, Grove's school nurse. Students who opt to come back within the district's hybrid plan have to certify each morning to let the school administration know they're not sick and they can safely come to school. Parents can access the self-certification form on the district website or through the Unit 5 Safe app. Markham, who is also curriculum chairperson for the Unit 5 nursing department, said she felt prepared to have the students back in the buildings this quarter. "We are so ready to go," she said. "We have been planning for weeks. We've been planning all summer long. We've been planning since March." Edwards gave kudos to the entire district staff for the work they put into prepare to bring the students back to class. "I know this was a big day coming, and there were a lot of things that needed to be done to prepare, and I think everyone has worked very, very hard," she said. The remaining grades, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 7th, 8th, 10th, 11th, and 12th, will come back starting next week. Also on the front page, we have 4 more Central Illinois COVID deaths reported. McLean County adds 76 cases. Pritzker says new wave may be here. This is by Paul Sweech. Four more Central Illinoisans died of COVID-19, and 76 additional McLean County residents have been diagnosed. It was announced Monday, the same day Governor J.B. Pritzker warned that the virus's new wave may be here. COVID fatalities included a Livingston County man in his 80s. He had more than one underlying health condition, but was not a resident of a long-term care facility, said Aaron Fogarty, a health department spokeswoman. He was Livingston County's 10th COVID death. A Tazewell County woman in her 80s. She was a resident of Timber Creek Rehab and Healthcare in Pekin, which is experiencing an outbreak. She was that county's 46th COVID death. A Ford County woman in her 70s who was not associated with a long-term care outbreak, said Danielle Walls, that county's health department's community health educator. The woman was Ford County's 10th COVID fatality. A LaSalle County woman in her 80s who was that county's 60th COVID death. In McLean County, Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight reported 76 additional people were diagnosed with the virus from Saturday to Monday, but another 61 people recovered. Three additional people were hospitalized with the novel virus. The 76 new diagnoses brought the county's total since March 19th to 3,858 cases. But another 61 people have recovered, as McKnight reported the county's recovery total had risen to 3,520 people. Three more people were hospitalized, with 14 McLean County inpatients, she said, but none were in intensive care. 12 more people were in home isolation, with 294 isolating as of Monday. 30 McLean County residents have died of the virus. The three most recent deaths were reported on October 13th. The county's seven-day positivity rate, the percent of county residents that have come back positive in the previous week, was 3.7 on Monday. That compares with a 4.4% on Friday. Of more than 89,000 tests of McLean County residents since March, 4.3% have come back positive, unchanged from Friday. The age group with the highest number of COVID cases in McLean County remain people in their 20s, but Illinois State University student COVID numbers continue to decline after peaking in early September. ISU reported that in the past 7 days, there have been 1,366 student tests on campus and 30 have come back positive, for a positivity rate of 2.2%, compared with Friday's rate of 2.4%. Since testing began on campus on August 17th, of 13,201 student tests, 1,404 have come back positive, for a positivity rate of 10.6, compared with 10.8 on Friday. ISU also reported that 1,369 students have recovered from the virus. At the COVID-19 testing site at the McLean County Fairgrounds at 1106 Interstate Drive in Bloomington, 332 people were tested on Sunday, McLean County Emergency Management Agency reported on Monday. That testing site, operated by Roditis Laboratories, is open 9 to 5 daily, except holidays and during severe weather. People may pre-register at testdirectly.com/McLean. Among other central Illinois counties, Tazewell reported 69 new cases to bring its total to 2,424. LaSalle reported 28 new cases to increase its total to 2,190. Livingston reported 28 new cases, including 8 inmates at Pontiac Correctional Center, bringing its total to 570. Logan County has 19 new cases, including 2 grade school students, increasing its total to 549, and Ford County announced 19 new cases, bringing its total to 174 confirmed cases. Logan County also announced free COVID testing at the health department in Lincoln by appointment only. Call 217-735 2317, extension 253. Statewide, Illinois Department of Public Health, IDPH, announced 22 new COVID deaths and 3,113 new COVID cases. While the deaths included one in Woodford County, that fatality was reported by the Woodford County Health Department last week. Since the pandemic hit Illinois in March, 347,161 Illinoisans have been sickened by the virus and 9,236 have died, IDPH said. The statewide positivity rate for cases as a percent of total tests for the week ending Sunday was 5.4%, compared with 5.3% one day earlier. As of Sunday night, 2,096 people in Illinois were hospitalized with COVID, with 485 of them in intensive care and 179 on ventilators. Every region of the state has started to move in the wrong direction, Pritzker said in a statement. Cases, positivity rates, hospitalizations, and deaths are rising statewide. Experts have predicted for months that the country could see a resurgence of the virus as temperatures get colder and more people spend more time inside. Here in Illinois, it looks like a new wave could be upon us. In McLean County court news, we have woman gets 23 years in prison for fatal stabbing by Kelsey Watznauer. The Bloomington woman, convicted of first-degree murder in a July 2018 stabbing, was sentenced Monday morning to 23 years in prison. Lila Jackson, 24, was found guilty in June of killing 24-year-old Quantez Brown outside her home on July 17th in 2018. During her trial, Jackson testified she acted in self-defense, saying Brown threatened her and made her fear for her life. However, Assistant State's Attorney John Shim said Brown died because of Jackson's choices, not those of the victim. It was the defendant who chose to stab Quantez with the knife, he said. Shim asked Judge Scott Drozewski to sentence Jackson to 28 years in prison. Shim also said during Jackson's time in the McLean County Jail, she completed the Jobs Partnership Program and anger management, as well as classes in food handling, criminal thinking, and domestic violence trauma, which was a survivor-based class. Jackson also attended Alcoholics Anonymous, GED courses, Bible study, and church worship while in custody. Drozewski said Jackson's enrollment in a variety of pursuits designed to better herself speaks well for her rehabilitative potential, as well as using her time wisely. She does seem to have the right attitude, and she's willing to accept the consequences for her actions, said Joseph Moran, Jackson's lead attorney. He asked for the minimum sentence of 20 years. 8 letters from family members and friends were submitted as evidence in mitigation, and Jackson's mother, Joanne Williams Link, testified to her history and character. Jackson recently thanked her mother during a phone call for raising and supporting her and said she was ready to be accountable for her actions, Lank said. In a statement delivered in court Monday, Jackson said her heart goes out to Brown's family and loved ones, and she prays for forgiveness. My heart has grown with wisdom and knowledge, she said. I am accountable for defending myself. I never intended to take a life. Drozewski said he weighed the factors of aggravation against those of mitigation, which included Jackson's lack of criminal history, her character, and the circumstances surrounding this criminal conduct that make it unlikely to occur again. Jackson will receive credit for 821 days spent in custody, and her sentence will be followed by 3 years of mandatory supervised release. In local and state news, we have Council Seeks Ways to Bring Public Art to the Community. This is by Annalisa Trofimuk. A public arts commission would help bring local art to city public rights of way and other spaces throughout Bloomington if the council decides next week to move forward with its implementation. Deputy City Manager Billy Tyrus, again on Monday, presented to council a proposal for the 7-person commission that would seek out local artists and funding to display various projects throughout the city. Tyrus first brought forth a proposal during a September council meeting, but it was ultimately tabled due to concerns over funding. This commission would propose an annual public arts program, and arts project would be listed in that program, said Tyus. Each year, there would be a suggestion of, as an example, this year the commission, based on community feedback, would be looking to do, maybe it's a sculpture project, sidewalk art project, an electrical project. Once the projects are established, a call for local artists would be issued. Projects moved forward by the commission would be mostly or entirely privately funded through donations or other sources, but the city could also decide to put in additional funds. Tyus said the approval of the proposal would not commit the city to spending any money on projects. They would be able to vote on spending separately. The commission would review submissions for the projects and make a recommendation to the city council members, who ultimately would have final approval over the projects. As proposed, the commission would consist of 7 people and a city staff member, Tyus said. The members would serve 2-year terms and would consist of the following: 2 members of the Bloomington Cultural Commission, 2 members of the city's beautification committee, and 3 members of the public. Multiple council members cited funding as a point of concern, saying that committing funds toward art during the pandemic might not bode well with residents. Ward 5 Alderwoman Joni Painter said her sticking point is funding. "I would like a guarantee that they would go out and get private funding, at least for a while, until this whole COVID thing is over and our economy stops shrinking," Painter said. Ward 2 Alderwoman Donna Boland said she liked the idea of approving the framework and discussing finances separately. Boland referenced the process the city uses with Connect Transit, which brings forth a budget proposal each year. "You have to remember that the money we are stewarding belongs to the public," Boland said. "If you are going to take money to put it in one project, it has to come from another project, or you have to raise taxes. And raising taxes on those who can at least support it, I'm not in favor of." City Manager Tim Gleason said the agenda item will appear before council during their meeting next week. Council members also discussed the previous proposal from Ward 3 Alderwoman Mboka Milambwe, who presented the idea of the city recognizing Juneteenth as a city holiday. "Held on June 19th, Juneteenth is the oldest nationally celebrated commemoration of ending slavery." Milambwe first sought the proposal to council in July. Council members informally agreed to move forward, but have not taken an official vote. Tyus said an analysis by the city's Human Resource Department found it would cost the city an estimated $164,000 to pay workers who are off, holiday pay, and increases in holiday pay for some employees who would be required to work on that day. "The cost is not the only thing or predominant thing that would drive this decision," said Tyus. "It's about how to properly honor this day and what it means. Celebratory and educational programs to honor the day would be established in partnership with community organizations." Tyus said there are multiple options to implement Juneteenth as a city holiday. The first option would incorporate the programming, a day off, and require amending the city code. The second option would be recognizing Juneteenth beyond a proclamation and allowing the Human Relations Commission to hold a day-long celebration. It would be a day-long event where there are both educational and celebratory events planned in our minds, he said. It would be something that becomes a destination in this area. Tyus said there could be other options for the council to discuss. "I would say, personally, what is most dear to me is the programming aspect, because I do think this is where we are going to have the most impact, and when people have a day off, it gives them a chance to reflect on these things," said Milambwe. He added that he wants to have everyone in the city celebrating the event and suggested it would be held on a Saturday or Sunday where everyone has an opportunity to be involved. For the town of Normal, we have Council OK's new road assessment program. This is by Sierra Henry. A new road assessment program will help prioritizing future road repairs, town leaders said. The Normal Town Council unanimously approved Monday an agreement with the McLean County Regional Planning Commission to conduct a comprehensive assessment of all roads in Normal. The Commission and Normal received an $80,000 grant through Illinois Department of Transportation Research and Planning Program. The entire project will cost around $100,000, and the town's share for the project is estimated at $20,000. The town currently uses two different systems for rating streets for construction and repair projects, which town staff said is difficult to use when comparing road conditions. Town engineer Ryan Otto said the new assessment program would provide a comprehensive data set that will aid town staff when planning the 5-year capital investment plan and prioritizing road projects. The town also will consider several other resolutions, including a resolution to award a $417,500 bid with up to a potential $5,000 bonus for early completion to SNC Construction, Inc., and authorize the city manager to execute agreements within Union Pacific and RailPros for the Main Street Water Main Extension Project. A resolution authorizing the city manager to enter into a 6-month lease agreement with Enterprise Fleet Management for 4 2021 GMC Sierra Double Cab 4x4 and 1 Chevrolet 15-passenger van. And a resolution amending the rules for public comments at meetings of the Normal Town Council and other town boards and commissions. Next, we have local response services continue. Resources remain available despite COVID pandemic. And this is by Paul Sweech. Officials with two organizations that work with McLean County survivors of domestic violence say services are continuing during the COVID-19 pandemic. We are still here providing therapy to children and non-offending parents, said Jeannie Higdon, Children's Home and Aid and Family Support Program Manager. And our Crisis Nursery and Family Visitation Center remain open. Said Senna Agenberg, Associate Executive Director and Director of Countering Domestic Violence Program at the Mid-Central Community Action. During the pandemic, we're still open. Our resources and services remain available. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and MCCA and Children's Home and Aid want to increase awareness, even though some traditional awareness-raising events aren't happening this year because of concern over the spread of COVID-19. For example, the traditional domestic violence awareness rally outside the McLean County Museum of History isn't happening this year, and the annual Survivor's Candlelight Vigil happened virtually on Thursday night. Among programs that are happening, a Children's Home and Aid webinar, Understanding Domestic Violence, is at noon on Friday on Zoom at https://zoom.us/j/9907495959. An MCCA webinar, Trauma-Informed Court Practices, is at noon on October 29th. You can register for this at https://tinyurl.com/TIPCW. At Children's Home and Aid, a purple ribbon brunch and safety fair have been replaced by a grab and go on Tuesday afternoon when agencies' families may come there to pick up a gift bag that includes a first aid kit and goodies, Higdon said. Children's Home and Aid has has distributed ribbons with tips, cards about how to keep children safe, and an art exhibit featuring works by local children is on the agency's Facebook page, Higdon said. Whatever it takes, virtual bike or run to benefit the crisis nursery is taking place throughout October. People may register at www.childrenhomeandaid.org/event/virtual-bike-or-run. During the fiscal year that ended June 30th, 4,052 calls were made to the CDV hotline, compared with 4,181 the year before, Adjeberg said. The number of people served in the CDV program was 650, compared with 757 the year before. Victims assisted in filing orders or protection decreased from 288 to 271. Neville House sheltered 82 adults and children, compared with 156 the year before. The numbers decreased because during the first couple of months of shelter in place after COVID hit central Illinois, some people thought incorrectly that the services had been suspended. The numbers picked up when people realized that we were still providing services. Next, we have Heartland Cyber Attack Investigation Continues by Lenore Sabota. 2 weeks after what's been described as a malicious cyber attack, Heartland Community College is continuing to restore some systems, but online classes are proceeding. We are in better shape every day, spokesman Steve Fast said Monday afternoon. He said the college is still restoring a lot of on-campus systems, operational things that you don't really notice. The attack, which encrypted files, was detected October 5th. The firm we engaged to do the forensic examination is still working, but there continues to be no indication that personal information was accessed or compromised, said Fast. Because the firm's work is an estimate of the financial cost of the cyber attack, he said, but the college has insurance for such events. Priority went to resuming online classes and the ability of faculty and students to communicate with each other, said Fast, and that was accomplished a week ago. Faculty members are working with students to address issues such as missed assignments, but it does not appear necessary to extend the academic year, he said. Because many of the online classes are being taught asynchronously, meaning they don't meet at a particular time, there is flexibility built into the schedule. It is mostly a matter of instructors adjusting deadlines for assignments or missed tests, Fast explained. There have been a few hiccups along the way, he said, with systems requiring an authentication process. Users had to change their passwords, and some got locked out if they had trouble remembering their old passwords, he said. Students needing help can call the main phone line at 309-268-8001. In a crime note, we have man facing cocaine charges by Kelsey Watznauer. Cocaine charges are pending against a Bloomington man, Anthony J. Jones. He is charged with two counts of unlawful delivery of less than 1 gram of cocaine, one count of unlawful possession of less than 1 gram of cocaine with the intent to deliver, and one count of unlawful possession of less than 15 grams of cocaine. A warrant was issued August 18th, and he was arrested on Monday, having been indicted by the McLean County Grand Jury. And with that, we conclude the first part of the Pantograph for Tuesday, October 20th, 2020. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with the second half of today's paper.